uncomfortable bowel movements, you know, is such a huge challenge in the world we live in today.
It's not something that's talked about at the dining room table or the dinner table, right? And I think even with close family, so you're not going to be talking with it. And, you know, it's one of those things that people kind of live with. Digestive health issues can be lead to other issues, right?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Nature City Podcast. I'm your host, Carl Pradelli, and I'm also the CEO and co-founder of the company, having started Nature City over 20 years ago with my wife, Beth, and since then, it's been our pleasure to have served over 500,000 Americans by offering them the best supplements we can make. Today, I think I'm really excited and glad you tuned in, because we're going to be talking about a novel and innovative dietary fiber called Sonal. Now, if you're one of the few Americans who already get enough dietary fiber in total, stay with us, because I think there's a good chance you're not getting enough of the fiber we're going to be talking about today, which is a type of resistant fiber. In the case of Sonal, it actually comes from potatoes, Canadian potatoes specifically. And what I also love about this story is that Sonal is an upcycled product. So what that means is actually made from what was previously waste. So we're taking something that was previously garbage and creating something that's very nutritionally beneficial for our health. To help me break it all down, joining me is Jason Liebert from MSP Starch Products, who makes Sonal. Jason, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Doing well, Carl.
Well, thank you so much for making time for us. Really excited about what you're doing up in Canada with potatoes.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much for having me here today.
Absolutely. So, Jason, as I mentioned, Sonal is a fiber that's a resistant starch. You know, when it comes to fiber, we usually think of soluble fiber versus insoluble fiber. But there's another fiber subclass called resistant starch. And I think even within that, you're going to tell me there's different types of resistant starch. Can you tell us a little bit about resistant starch and why it's so important to our health?
Yeah, I think when it comes to the resistant starch story, I think maybe just kind of take a bit of a step back. And, you know, we're in several, our communities are in crisis with several nutrients that, you know, we're no longer getting. And RS2, I'll maybe refer to it as RS2 or resistant starch type 2. You know, it was in our diet ancestrally, right? Back, you know, tubers, plant sources, and that we used to get key nutrients from it. And due to, you know, factors and things that in our food processing or just cooking our food, this nutrient is really left our communities and is no longer in. And just to, you know, given it kind of set the stage, there was the average American's getting about 4 grams of resistant starch per day. And so, Carl, you may be wondering, okay, Jason, 4 grams, what does that mean? And that was a paper that came out of Mindy Patterson and her group that were doing some looking at the NHANES database and understanding where is resistant starch coming from. And so the average American getting kind of that 4 grams of RS2, jump over to kind of Australia. So Dr. Topping, who's a leading dietitian and researcher over there, they had this premise that if we, you know, got fiber and got resistant starch back into our diets, that we would see other health issues start to bend. And they actually saw these health issues increase at the trajectory that the Western world's at. And they circled, it's the lack of certain kind of fibers and resistant starch type 2. And so that's kind of been 4 grams is what, you know, of this fiber, like you said, of resistant starch we're getting in our diet. Dr. Topping and their group of there in this cohort that they studied, they're saying now we need 20 grams of this. And so no other, we have suggested dietary targets for fiber, as you kind of meant, but we don't have it for resistant starch or other prebiotics, I'd say. So our whole vision, America's at 4 grams, number one source in America. Canada's no different. Like you said, being here from Canada and North America, the number one source is French fries. So we're not going to have, right? We're not going to have a model to say, let's eat more French fries, but we need this nutrient, right? We need this nutrient. And so our vision and our focus is if we could build science, and I know we'll unpack that throughout the discussion today, that we could close that gap and restore health in our communities.
Yeah. So it sounds like Dr. Topping concluded that he probably was looking at a lot of health issues associated with aging, and was able to create an association or a linkage between not getting enough of this fiber and increased levels of, you know, some of those challenges, whether it be heart problems, digestive problems, you name it, just through not specifically just fiber, but specifically, as you call it, the RS2 or resistant starch type 2. Is that a fair summary of it?
Yeah, exactly. I think like anything, if you said probiotics, right? We know that certain strains and species, like, that's not a fair to say probiotics are good as a big blanket. And I think what we'll learn as fiber, right? There's different different tools in that fiber toolbox. And I think there'll be certain ones that are probably we'll find more important to overall health than others. But fiber in general is super important.
No, it is important. And kind of as I alluded to earlier, I mean, I think it's around 30 grams of fiber. It's generally recommended. I think for men, it's a little higher than, I think it's 35 for men, maybe 30 for women, depending on which source you're looking at. But even that, just looking at fiber as a category, I think most people struggle to get 15 to 20 grams, right? And then, you know, within that, you're saying only about 4 grams on average is the RS2 that the Australian researchers found is so important. And just to review again quickly, the two reasons why this is much more challenging, you know, to get resistant fiber in our diets these days. Yeah. I think it was sort of dietary preferences have changed, and just cooking methods or just food processing in general.
Yeah, so it's a temperature sensitive nutrient, right? There are those out there, and so when we heat it, that granule bursts, and as it bursts, you know, we cook for safety reasons. Cooking, when we kind of say food processing, it's not to vilify. There's been lots of things positive that have come out, right? In that, but the RS2 granule that can't survive that process, and so. We've kind of lost it. And I think some of the research that's been done from a public health standpoint, showing how much is in our diets, it's just not there. And so our vision, our mission as an organization was, our belief was if we could, you know, do strong science, we're not a large company. But if we could support it with strong human clinical research and that we could show humanity, show our communities that this is a nutrient you want to fold in when you're building innovative formulations, and here's why. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I definitely want to get into some of those details, Jason, in a moment. But one of the things I just want to, I think it's interesting that to elaborate on a little bit. You know, I've read that, you know, resistant starch and RS2 particularly can actually offer benefits associated with both soluble fiber and insoluble fiber. Can you just tell what's meant by this? Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of what makes it unique. So we all have the psyllium husks or the, you know, insoluble fibers. And then we know soluble fibers, right, that we have in our toolbox and that are fermentable. And I think what's really, we like to say RS2 and Solnol is kind of the unsung hero in the fiber category, because like you were mentioning, Carl, it is insoluble in nature, but it is fully fermentable and used by the gut microbiome. And so that's kind of where the magic happens. And there's benefits for, again, insoluble fiber or soluble fiber, too much, too little of each, right? You can cause issues, but I think the magic happens when we can start modulating the gut microbiome. And I think that's why RS2, and that's why Mother Nature put it in some really pivotal food sources for us.
No question about it. So, Jason, before we get into some of the specific research findings that you've done and I guess continue to do and the benefits of Solnol, the resistant starch fiber, let's just talk a little bit about the story because I think it's so intriguing. I think people will be so impressed when they sure. hear about just how Solnol is made, you know, which, I, as I said before, is really yeah. from what was previously waste.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're like you, a Canadian company. So we're located in Carberry, Manitoba, a small town just of 1,800 people west of Winnipeg. And so, yeah, our founders were the largest potato growers in the province. So they're farmers and, you know, love potatoes, you know, knew the whole model of potatoes and the nutrient. And so, but they're addicted entrepreneurs, right? And they love trying to figure out the invisible and understand, you know, that. And so they got out of farming, into processing and, worked with the other, like you said, upcycled, the processing facilities, in the community to kind of, the co-product that was being created from there. We don't like saying wasted, you know, co-product, but it is, really these starch granules were liberated from their process and the whole upcycled, and we can, you know, we were one of the first upcycled certified ingredients, in Canada. So upcycle movement's really growing. And we're really excited to kind of be a part of that sustainability, right, Carl? We could unpack of all that, and ultimately the upcycled food association definition is using something to its highest purpose. And I don't know what would be its higher purpose than feeding your microbiome and like human health, right?
Absolutely. So as I understand it, and I may not have it fully correct,
but yeah.
I think what's happening is, I assume the potatoes are like cleaned and peeled and then they're cut up.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so we,
maybe exactly. Just explain it. Cause, you could do a lot better than I could.
Yeah. So we they're peeled potatoes. They're, when you process potatoes, you use water knives. That water then gets used as often as it can, but like you would cut a potato at home, Carl, you could see that little white on your knife or those granules being liberated. We then bring that back to our facility in Carberry where we put that through our process and build a product that our partners can use in that.
So so you basically take this resistant starch out of the water, I guess, I assume.
Yeah.
And then I guess the water can be recycled itself probably too, I presume.
Yeah, exactly. And then bring that back to our facility where we're able to process it through our and create a really premium high quality product that we then can do research on to show really how it's feeding the gut microbiome. So it's very exciting. I think the upcycled movement, sustainability, just watching that organization grow and it's been fascinating. And some of the data, I think consumers get the last vote, right? We can all have our beliefs, but some of the data that the Upcycled Food Association is coming out with is that, you know, 62% of consumers are willing to pay more for upcycled product. 70% of consumers have an intention to purchase, a greater intention to purchase upcycled certified products or upcycled products. And so I think, as we choose the inputs that go into our products, we're really excited to be.
And Jason, final question on this, and then we'll get into some of the aspects of what it can do for us. Once you bring it back and you extract the starch, I mean, do you have to do anything to it in terms of like enzymes and stuff to make it?
No. So it's just water, drying, temperature. As I said, you know, that temperature, something you have to be mindful of, because RS2 can change in temperature and all that. And so, yeah, no, it's we use water and kind of those things to produce the product.
And whereas, you know, resistant starch, the difference between resistant starch and starch is the resistant starch is not digestible, right? So usually right. starch.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it, where it passes through your stomach and feeds the colon and the microbes in your colon, and that's where those health benefits
are. Right. So whereas regular starch, you know, can increase blood glucose levels and has calories attached to it, resistant starch doesn't have that.
Correct. It's a fiber kind of a thing. So yeah, it's not that carbohydrate.
Great. And that's a terrific story. Thank you for sharing that. Now, one of the challenges sometimes, Jason, you know, people get worried when they hear about fibers is, it causes bloating or causes me problems as it ferments. You know, how is Sonal tolerated by users?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, as we chase that fiber coin, right? And we try and get more fiber, like you said, our communities are low in fiber. And so it's going to be really important that we choose certain fibers to introduce them and introduce their microbiome back to that food source. And so Sonal is one of the things is, you know, Sonal is very, very tolerable. Just to give you an idea of molecular wise, inulin is one of those ones that soluble fiber, rapidly fermented, you know, that kind of thing. Sonal is 1,000 times bigger molecular wise than inulin. And so it's going to be that slow burning, slow fermenting fiber. Because as we have, you know, as Mary, you know, let's say Mary consumes, she wants to get more fiber in her diet. If she goes and has a soda that has a ton of soluble fibers in or goes to that, Mary's going to overload, right? All that stacking of those fibers can be really detrimental to her experience with the product. So I think, you know, tolerability isn't talked enough about, Carl, in my mind, especially as we try and close this gap, because, you know, we can make it taste good. Consumers expect that now. Yep. That's kind of, if you don't have a good tasting product, right?
Yeah, and it'd be and one that, and done, but, right?
yeah. You're not going to go too far and so on. And so I think we've mastered that. Now putting something that's tolerable that Mary or Adam is going to be able to handle, right? Yeah. Is really key as we start to introduce. And as that microbiome shifts, it, you know, may be more resilient to fold another.
Right. So I think the level that you've determined Sonal, at least the minimum level that Sonal is effective, is about 3.6 grams of Sonal.
3.5. Okay. So in our clinical research, our human research that we did with our partners at Nutrisource, when we looked at evaluating, resistant starch has been around for a while, right? Yep. It's a nutrient that's been around, but a lot of research has been at really high doses. And so 3.5 is kind of where our dose, wanting to look at that lower dose. Because again, kind of going back to that vision, we have to get this nutrient back in our communities, right? And this is, and even, you know, as we're building the science portfolio and we're learning more about how important it is, you're probably not going to go take 30 grams of something or 40 grams of something, right? There's challenges to that.
No, yeah. There's challenges. There's, it's just a lot to consume, not to mention the cost, right? So,
yeah. So our vision is if we could meet Mary where the consumer was, mm-hmm. Then we could fold it into, you know, drink mixes, blends, different things, kind of.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. So let's talk about some of the benefits of Sonal that you've identified from some of your research. Let's start with prebiotic activity and what you've found and how it can help, you know, support beneficial bacteria flourishing in the intestines.
Yeah. So as I kind of wrap, you know, turn back to that clinical trial. We knew we had to do human clinical work.
Absolutely.
Right? In order to get that into our, so from that study, what we looked at was Bifidobacterium was one of the key endpoints of the trial. And We now have a couple papers published, peer-reviewed. By going into PubMed and searching Solnol, if anybody's interested, or I'm sure we can provide some links on the podcast here to those papers. But yeah, we saw an increase of Bifidobacterium by 215% over baseline at 4 weeks compared to the placebo. And so we know Bifido is one of the good ones, absolutely, right? And they're one of the early, those keystone bacteria that one needs. And we were really excited to see that that improvement at a low dose, right? All at that 3.5 gram dose. And so the other piece that, you know, paired to that is on the Bristol stool scale. So we saw improvements. Part of that clinical research that we found was improvements at type 1 on the Bristol stool scale, so constipated, that kind of state. But we also saw improvements at type 7. And so those are people that are loose, mm-hmm, right? That kind of thing. And what we saw in our data is we were able to normalize those folks.
Right.
So basically bringing it down. Yeah. So that health benefit as a prebiotic.
Which is important. I mean, we don't want to get too gross for our audience here, but you need things, you need your stools to be hydrated and soft, but not too soft to where it starts coming, you know, you have diarrhea issues or something like that. So it sounds like
stool Bristol stool scale isn't a topic, Carl, at home for your
we might lose a few folks.
I feel it's become mine. My kids.
Yeah. If we start showing pictures, we're really going to have problems keeping our audience here. But it really is an important thing as people try, because, you know, I mean, we talk about fiber being a challenge. Just staying regular and not just being regular, but comfortable bowel movements, you know, is such a huge challenge in the world we live in today. So,
But all joking aside, it's not something that's talked about at the dining room table or the dinner table, right? And I think even with close family, so you're not going to be talking with it. And, it's one of those things that people kind of live with. Digestive health issues can lead to other issues, right?
And not only is it uncomfortable, it's a major health concern for sure. I mean, it's important. Yeah. So, that was, you know, very much a landmark study for you guys. I also read from some of your materials, and this is really interesting to me, that Solnol was shown to help promote another type of beneficial bacteria, a class called Akkermansia, if I'm saying that correctly, in the intestines. You know, Akkermansia seems to be getting a lot of attention and more focus. I see a lot of companies in our industry starting to talk a little bit about it and engaging some studies, because I guess it seems to support several aspects of metabolic health and healthy blood sugar metabolism. What were you able to see with respect to Solnol and Akkermansia?
Yeah, well, so after we wrapped up this clinical trial, we have this data set, and we're not a large organization, but our chief scientific officer, Dr. Jason Bush, mm-hmm, you know, we were asked of what else did you see in that data, right? And data is very, very clean. But one of the things we saw was, and we were getting asked about, this next generation probiotic, Akkermansia. And sure enough, we see really robust results. And that was published, we had that published last March in one of our papers. We saw a 238% increase over baseline at that 4 week time point. And wow. So what does it teach us? Like you said, there is a lot of awareness in the category. There's companies that are probiotic manufacturing, postbiotic manufacturing all around this Akkermansia. And like you said, other folks are for those health areas. We were very, very impressed. And so Akkermansia doesn't feed on, or Akkermansia feeds on mucin. Right. So a healthy colon produces mucin. And that's what it feeds on. And so what we believe is happening is it's not this direct feeding of acromantia, but as we shift, right, your microbiome's always shifting and evolving and changing depending on what you're eating and all that. Now that we put that food source, we put Solmol in there, we're feeding that bifidobacterium. The environment is starting to change as it turns into a more healthier environment and not such a dysbiotic state. Acromantia now can feed on that mucin. And now all the exciting things can happen. You and I, Carl, wouldn't live in a house without any food,
right?
We wouldn't. We'd go to the next house or try and find a house, or maybe we'd start eating the walls. Right. I don't know. We'd find some way to try and survive because with no food. And it's really kind of the state we'd left our microbiome in by not putting that food source. And so it takes decades, but a lot of weird things have happened when our microbiome isn't well fed.
No, it's like anything else. You know, we do certain things which the headline is, it's better for you because of this, but you know, like anything else, there's pros and cons to the things we do. And in this case, it sounds like the acromantia bacteria has been a little bit of a victim of not getting, you know, whether it be resistant starch or other things that it kind of depends on to flourish pretty much.
So now we're learning the importance of it, right? As science evolves and our communities, do we just learn more? We're learning now. We never had that data 10 years ago, 5 years ago. Now we're starting to understand that this is one of the really important for host health.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, Jason, but are there any other prebiotic fibers that you've seen where they have data similar to what you have on acromantia?
Yeah, we're seeing some of the HMO group have some acromantia data. Okay. Coming up, I think there's some animal data out there that is available for some other different prebiotic sources. But animal data, I think we got to throw it, test it in humans before we make too many assumptions.
Yeah.
It's a step.
No, it is a step in the process. And, you know, we look at Nature Say, we ultimately rely on the human data when we're formulating our products. And I thought the answer was no, really. A lot of other fibers haven't been able to show this data in humans yet. So I thought what you did was, you know, pretty novel and innovative in terms of findings, which made it all the more impressive. So another important area for digestive health that I think you've done some work on is with respect to the intestinal barrier function in the gut. For folks who maybe not exactly sure what we're talking about, and Jason, you help me describe this better if I don't do a good job of it. The lining of our intestines essentially has a barrier which helps keep things we don't want, like toxins and other stuff, from being absorbed into our bodies. You know, it's almost kind of akin, you know, I don't know if scientifically this is totally accurate, but I always think of it compared to the blood-brain barrier, right? Where the blood-brain barrier tries to keep things we don't want out of the brain. Well, in the intestines, we have a similar barrier that, you know, where it's functioning properly, keeps things we don't want out of the body. What have you guys been able to see in terms of Solmol supporting, you know, healthy gut barrier function?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, this whole idea of, you know, Hippocrates, all disease begins in the gut, right? Or that whole... And when you look at the stats, you know, 4 out of 5 Americans, Mintel had a report, are still healthy people are still having digestive complaints, right? So like 4 out of 5, that's a very big number, right? That are still having. And so back to kind of our roots or our, you know, science. We knew if we could push the barrier, push the limits on research and science, that we could show how powerful this nutrient was. And so what we undertook, we looked at, so we have our gut microbiome data. We talked about, you know, bifidobacterium, acromantia, but we were able to kind of twist our arms of our our shareholders, and we were able to get some Canadian, shout out to the Canadian grant, some funding up here from the Canadian government. And we were able to look at metabolomics. So specifically, we're looking at metabolomics in the blood and in the serum. And so these whole changes, what's happening, you know, if Hippocrates is right 2000 years ago that, you know, disease does begin in the gut, then we know we'll have changes, or we should expect changes throughout the body. Sure. Right. And so we started, and really proud of our work here. This was published last September, in one of our papers, but looking at this metabolomics data set, now we have data from the blood, and we have data in the stool. And so we're able scientifically to start making connections because we have these robust data sets. And so I'm getting into, you know, how does this leaky gut, you know, or that whole gut barrier function issue that we're talking about. So one of those markers, those biomarkers we saw in the blood, was histamine. Mm-hmm. Right. So histamine, marker for inflammation. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, how is that tied back? Well, number one source of histamine in your body is your digestive tract, is your gut. And so your bacteria produce histamine, which is normal. But you also get it from seafood, other different food sources that produce high histamine. Yeah. Now, when that system's working as it's been designed to work, your waste is exiting out of your body, right? Yeah. It's working. But after decades of breakdown and other issues, now that waste and that can get into your blood, cross over. And I think just in a very, without getting too deep on it, you know, what we're seeing now, we have acromantia data. We know how that acromantia feeds. We now have that data on in the serum and in the blood. Now we're able to understand what is happening. So when we can heal the gut,
yeah,
right, we can see cascading effects throughout the body. So that's just one example. And so yeah, we now Solnol, we've got some really, really exciting research on how that can support that function as well.
So you were able, let me see if I can summarize that. So you are able to look at both histamine levels, and like you said, histamine is produced in the gut, but also we get it from food. And actually a lot of like things we generally consider healthy foods, fish, fermented foods, even good meats. I mean, you know, there is a level of histamine that comes along with that. And our body has a way of dealing, you know, to keep within a normal range. Because I'm sure histamine, like other things, does have good benefits in the body, right? But it's when it gets to elevated levels where it becomes a challenge. And there's a part of that you were able to show metabolites in the serum and otherwise that show this gut barrier function seem to be improving. Whereas there, and then, mm-hmm. you know, it wouldn't be as many toxins or other unwanted substances passing through that protective lining, which is to our benefit and health over both short term and long term. Is that fair?
Correct. Yeah. So when we have those junctions closed, right? The body's working as it was designed to do. Yeah.
And you did mention the phrase leaky gut, which is one way it's commonly referred to, where those junctures, those tight junctures, aren't as tight as they should be, and things leak into the bloodstream. Hence the term leaky gut. So, look, another incredible, you know, benefit of Solnol supplementation. And that was over what period of time, do you recall that study?
It was 4 weeks. Four. So that all at that 3.5 gram dose.
Excellent. Well, we talked about the prebiotic activity. We talked about the healthy intestinal barrier function in the gut. We talked a little bit about, you know, helping promote regular and comfortable bowel movements. Is there anything else you're excited about or you guys have seen with respect to Solnol and the digestion and supporting the digestion process?
Yeah, I guess so. Back to that metabolomics data set that I kind of mentioned. Okay. So really, there are you know, we call it our Beyond the Gut series, right? Where we're, you know, there was about 5 or 6 markers and we're still unpacking the data set because it is so robust and it's a evolving area of research, right? Where the community is just learning more and more. But we saw one of the other markers that we saw is takes us into that gut skin axis. One of the markers was 5-hydroxylysine. So in the research, the understanding there is collagen breaks down, that metabolite increases. So when you look at papers on burn victims or different other situations when there's severe damage to the skin, we see that metabolite increase. So that has now taken us not only into gut health or gut barrier function, but now we are into kind of that healthy aging, longevity, right? Kind of an avenue. And really all this data set is just showing the power of resistant starch and SOLMOL, right? If we can restore that and the power of the microbiome, kind of a thing. So yeah, that's another area, Carl, that we're seeing some benefits.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing because, I mean, it's just so counterintuitive. We say, well, how can fiber help my skin? People say it makes no sense, right? But there's just so much that's happening in the gut in terms of all the way it metabolizes all these organisms and all these other things happen. Was it hydroxylysine? Is that what you said?
Yeah, 5-hydroxylysine.
So I assume that's derivative of the amino acid lysine or something?
It's a metabolite.
Okay. But that's happening in the gut, you know. So, I mean, and that helps, I think you said, protect. Well, when you reduce levels of the 5-hydroxylysine, that helps protect collagen. Did I get that correct?
Yeah. So it's we know that 5-hydroxylysine is a metabolite when collagen breaks down. So we improve it by almost 20%.
Okay.
Right. In our research, what we've found. And so the whole concept is rather than having it break down quicker, right? We're seeing that benefit.
No, that's wonderful. And certainly, you know, there's so much focus now on the beauty from within, you know, and it's just another way of going about it, it sounds like to me.
Yeah, there's lots of tools, right? Like collagen peptides, vitamin C, as you know, several that are key. And I think now, kind of for the first time, we can show SOLMOL or prebiotics that are showing actual biochemical changes.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
In it. So it just adds to that toolbox.
No question. Very exciting. So another big topic, I'm not sure if you guys have done any work on this, or maybe as you analyze your data, you'll have something to report on. Another big thing, Jason, people are talking about is the gut brain axis, right? And the connection between what's going on in the gut affects your mind and I guess vice versa too, as signaling goes back and forth. Have you guys done any work here yet?
Not yet. So that's part of that, So I don't have anything directly to share, Carl, with you and your audience today, but we're going to continue and pack some of the data set that we have. And I think we'll have something to share in the coming months.
Well, that's not that far off, Jason. So that's exciting. And what else is on your wish list and things that you think may be interesting to research with respect to SOLMOL?
Yeah, I think sports nutrition, some of these other, I think one of the other interesting characteristics of SOLMOL is because it's insoluble, it's not drawing water into the colon, right? So soluble fibers draw water in because this is that vessel. And so I think so from a hydration standpoint, I think there is avenues and there's things in sports nutrition that we can explore further and do some research around. But I think, you know, we started this journey a while ago, even before the microbiome was as hot as it is today, right? Sure. And everybody's understanding. And I think science takes time and research and all this doesn't happen overnight. And so I'm really excited to see, you know, what we'll learn from other people's work and then how we can, I guess, how Somal can play a role in that. Ultimately, you know, achieving health for our community and driving it forward.
Excellent. Excellent. You know, Jason, one of the things I always, you know, the audience is always interested in is just from a safety perspective, you know, is there any concerns with Somal when used as directed or things that you should be cautioned about?
Yeah, no, it's a whole food, you know, work glyphosate residue free, as well as upcycled FODMAP I mentioned. And so, yeah, no, it's a whole food source. So it's getting the food, you know, back into. So yeah, no, it's, you know, tolerability we talked about. Yeah. So yeah, no, it's kind of, getting it back in. Is the key.
Yeah, no pesticide residues or things like that that you have to worry about.
Correct.
That's great. Yeah. And, you know, I know 3.5 is, again, if you take 2 or 3 servings a day, if that would, you know, if you were to do that, I assume that would have no problems as well.
Yeah. So we've seen, used our product at 30 grams, in clinical settings. All the way up. And so what we saw there was no adverse events. So I think, you know, it all depends. I think our communities are, you know, we're short on fiber as the data is showing us. And so we got a long ways to go. But I think making sure they're reaching for that tolerable fiber is going to be so critical.
Absolutely. Well, Jason, this has been wonderful. Is there anything we might have left out that the audience should know about Somal?
I fiber resistant starch, you know, it's so critical. And I would just challenge, you know, everyone watching this to find a way to feed your microbes, change your mindset, change your perspective. And I think if we get to a point where we can feed our microbes and give them the food sources that they require, in return, they will take care of us. And so, I'm excited to see where the community goes and the research goes on that front.
Absolutely. And for folks watching or listening, if you're interested in Somal, we were so impressed with it in Nature City. We made a key part of a new product that we just introduced called True DYB, with the DYB staying for Digest Your Best. You'll find the same 3.5 grams, or is it 3.6? I always get confused. Serving of Somal in each scoop of True DYB, which you can find at naturecity.com. And Jason, we look forward to working together with you and the rest of the team at MSP, and having, you know, helping a lot of people in the future.
Amazing, Carl. We're very excited to see that product come to market. And yes, let's close that gap on resistant starch in our communities. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So folks, that's it for this week's episode. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel to see future episodes. We're also available on your favorite streaming platforms. So whether it be Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you can find us in all those places. But when you go to nhc.com and hopefully check out the True DYB with Somal, also sign up for our email list. Each week, you'll get an email alert when there's a new episode of the NHC podcast that drops. So you can keep in touch with all the new and exciting ingredients like Somal as they become available. Jason, thank you again. Really appreciate you making time, and we will talk soon.
Thanks, Carl. Been a pleasure. Take care.
See you all next week.